Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Bobby Oliver talks about being cyber-stalked.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere, this anonymous account responds to me and he says, "I hope you get raped." And I was like, "Wow, you led with that." So I blocked him, and then he started a new Twitter account just to respond to me. And he tweeted me, "You think you can block me, bitch?" So, I blocked him again, and he kept making new accounts over and over. He ended up creating over 40 different Twitter accounts just to tweet me.
Today on the show, comedian Bobby Oliver from The Tao of Comedy talks about being cyber-stalked. Stay close.
Hey, y'all, it's Bobby Oliver. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 10 years, or you're a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys listened to the show last week by actress Cheyenne Ray Hernandez. It was called, Don't Give Up. Yeah, it was just called Don't Give Up. But I got to tell you, the reason why that show has gotten so many downloads, in my opinion, well, first of all, she's in a blockbuster movie right now, so that would help. She's the actress in the movie out right now called The Tax Collector. But also, she's only 25, and she just has such a killer story. It has so much tragedy in her life already at such a young age. And then she goes to the Army, she becomes an Army medic, and she comes out, and now she's an actress. And she's just kicking ass. She plays this villain, like I said, in The Tax Collector, and she's just a stunning girl. So you guys, please go back, listen to Cheyenne Ray Hernandez, and you won't be sorry. It's very inspirational, especially for such a young girl. This is the kind of story I hear from people, you know, in their 40s and 50s who, as it were, lived a little. But here's a young girl who is just, she's seen it all. So very interesting. So go back, you guys, listen to her story. But not today, because today I'm here with a really exciting comedian that I've been watching for a long time, and I admire her so much. And I'm just so glad she's on the show. She's been in the game for years. And, I mean, she's up there with some of the other comics I've had on, like Wendy Liebman, Judy Gold. I mean, she has experience. Bobby is a business owner in Los Angeles, which is amazing in itself. And she has her own comedy club. It's on Western in Los Angeles, and it's called the Tao Comedy Studio. Is that right, Bobby?
Yeah, well, actually, it's pronounced Tao. It's spelled T-A-O, but it's pronounced Tao.
I feel so stupid. That is so embarrassing.
Yeah, hey, we don't speak Chinese. It's okay. It's because that stupid restaurant that calls themselves Tao.
Does everybody know that, or is that confused all the time?
No, everybody gets it wrong. It's actually, if we were to pronounce it correctly, it would be Tao.
Oh.
But we sound stupid doing that, so we're not going to do that.
Well, yeah, that's just so interesting. I feel, that makes me feel kind of dumb. But what I love about your comedy club, and I performed there on Teresa Lowe's show. You know Teresa.
Yes, awesome.
She's such a sweet girl and a really smart girl, and she's an author, and she's been on Storyworthy.
And she just interviewed me for Hustler magazine.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? She's such an unlikely sex writer. You know what I mean?
But have you seen her?
Yeah, she's smoking.
She's incredibly sexy. Yeah.
Yeah, she's smoking. Well, she's on stage frequently in lingerie.
Yeah, she even got me to perform in my underwear.
That is so adorable. I think that's adorable. I was supposed to do one of those shows, but then it got pushed, and then COVID, and I was supposed to do her slumber party.
That's what I did. Yeah, it was terrifying.
What did you wear?
Okay, so first I wore long johns, And then I went on stage and I said, okay, I don't know y'all well enough to get naked yet.
Yeah.
So I told a joke and then I took off my top and then I told another joke and I took off my pants. Basically, I had on bra and panties, but I had on this sheer shirt over it. So like I was kind of naked, but kind of not. I've been doing comedy 32 years. I've never been so nervous about any show I've ever done in my life.
That is so interesting. That is so interesting. This whole thing is like so Brady Bunch, you know, when you picture people in their underwear.
Yeah, it actually makes you more nervous.
That is really funny. Obviously, you are from another place. You're not from Los Angeles. Nobody is. Obviously, nobody is.
I am from another place. You're from this mystical place called Georgia.
Georgia. Where is this Georgia you speak of? Where is this Atlanta? Yes, of course, but your accent is just adorable. I love it so much.
Thank you. I could lose it if I wanted to. I've been here 23 years, so I really have no excuse to sound like this.
Uh-huh.
But guys like it.
You know that I got here in August of 97, 23 years ago.
Oh, we got here in March.
That is unbelievable. And I still hadn't met you in person. And
I
still haven't.
Like we know each other.
Yeah,
because we know each other. We're constantly like interacting online.
Yeah, there's circles of us going around. So I'm really happy that you're here today because I've seen a lot of your comedy online and I admire you, man. You have got, okay, here's what Bobby Oliver has, you guys. She has this, and I know it's in your book called The Tao of Comedy, right?
Right.
Not the Tao, but the Tao of Comedy. And it's in your book that you have an ability and you've narrowed it down to one sentence about comedy, and that is embrace the pause.
Yes, I even have pause tattooed on my wrist.
Wow, that is cool.
The pause is the secret to my kung fu.
You guys, Bobby Oliver has pause written on her wrist, which is so flippin' smart. I have three tattoos that none of them make sense. That makes sense. So can you go ahead and just explain that to the audience for anybody that might not understand what you're saying?
Well, you know how they say timing is everything?
Right.
Timing is everything, on stage and off stage. But when they say that, what they're talking about is the pause. So comedians tend, when they're starting out, they tend to not realize that comedy is not a monologue. It's a dialogue between you and the audience. You have your part and they have their part, and their part is in the pause. So the pause is like taking a salt shaker full of magic fairy dust, sprinkling it over your act and making it 10 times funnier. But it's also about the pause in life. It's about meditation and mindfulness and being in the present moment. You know, we all want this aha moment, right? We all want this big idea, but the aha moment needs a space to move into. So if you want something, first, pursue nothing.
Dude, because, that is so good.
Because something needs a space to move into. So, you know, comedy comes from the nothingness. So that's what it's about. It's about embracing the pause on stage, but also in your life through meditation and mindfulness.
Now, a good example of that, embracing the pause, I was thinking about in your act, you do a thing on stage about that movie Ghost. And, you know, that old movie. It's like 30 years old now. But at the time, it was an iconic scene where Demi Moore is, you know, over the pot of clay. And then, you know, the guy comes up behind her. And then what happens?
Well, she's making the pot. He comes up behind her and embraces her. The pot collapses. The music's playing. You know, and you can so tell from that scene that they're newlyweds, right? Because if they'd been married a long time, she'd be like, what the fuck? I'm trying to make a pot. You always do this.
Okay, now here's what you do on stage. You drag that scene out for like another 20 seconds by just looking behind you. And every time you look behind you, it's like you're Demi Moore ready to slap his face off. And so the audience, you get like four jokes with no words said. It's stunning, Bobby. You're the queen of the pause.
Thank you. That's the best compliment, to, in my opinion, to ever be given. So thank you very much.
Yeah, that would be a very worthwhile thing for me to embrace more. I do meditate, and I definitely like to do one activity at a time.
Yes.
I multitask, however, it's very specific. I mean, I guess I don't multitask. Like, I only podcast when I podcast, and I only play the piano when I play the piano, and I only play the guitar when I play the guitar. You know what I mean? So I really am I'm not multitasking. I do a lot of things. That is not necessarily good either, though.
But I always tell my students that one of their homework assignments every single day is to catch yourself multitasking and stop everything but one thing.
I think that is so smart. Bobby, I love that you teach. I love that you help so many people, dude. I mean, you have helped so many comedians, and you teach the comedy classes, of course, but then you also let people do showcases in your club. You rent the space out, I guess. And it's such a beautiful space. It's so well done. Every detail is really nice. The backstage area is nice. The green room. People take pictures against like this colorful wall.
We have a gorgeous patio, but we've also fixed up the parking lot for outdoor shows and open mics. We did one there last night for the first time, and we fixed it up so it's gorgeous. Instead of the parking lot, now I call it the Dow back lot.
Wow, I really like that. I'm coming.
You got to see the pictures of it. It's so beautiful now.
Oh, I will definitely look for that. Now, I know you've got a website, bobbyoliver.net, but do you also have a Dow website?
Yes.
Is that different? What is that?
Yes, dowcomedystudio.com.
Dowcomedystudio.com.
Dow, of course, is spelled T-A-O.
T-A-O.
And Bobby is spelled B-O-B-B-I-E because
That's
I'm
right.
not a boy.
That's right. I think that as soon as you talk, everybody hears your voice. They know you're a girl.
But they do not know how to spell Bobby to save their damn lives.
Okay, because I think they're thinking of the Bruce Springsteen song, Bobby Jean. Could that be it?
Well, just people just are more familiar with guys named Bobby, so they're used to spelling it B-O-B-B-Y.
Do you still have family in Georgia?
All of my family is in Georgia.
Okay, let's hear their names just for fun.
Okay, well, my oldest brother, the fundamentalist evangelical minister,
his name
is Eddie. Yeah, I just call him asshole for short.
Oh, my God.
His name is Eddie. And then my middle brother's name is Gerald. And, of course, it's pronounced Gerald.
G-E-R-A-L-D?
Yes.
And you say Gerald?
Gerald.
Gerald.
Not Gerald.
Gerald. I would say Gerald, yeah.
And then the youngest brother is named Ron. And then my sister is named Bella because my mama was temporarily married to a rich guy.
What's her last name? Is it Oliver?
My sister has a fancy. No, that's my married name. I'm married to comedian Chris Oliver.
That's right.
My last name is Evans.
So she is, then her name is, Bella Evans.
It was. Now it's Bella Grant.
Oh, my God.
And then
Bella
my brother's
so
last
beautiful.
Name is all Hayes because, you know, my mama was married three times.
She was, wow, that's a lot. And was she young those times or was she older?
Yeah, actually, you know what? By the time my mama was 28, she had five kids.
Yeah. My mom at 30 had six because I'm the youngest of six. Yeah. So she had my oldest sister when she was 20 and me when she was 30 and six of us in there.
Oh, wow.
And we're still 10 years apart. Ta-da.
All right. Funny how that works. I'm also the baby.
Oh, isn't this interesting?
Yeah.
Wow. It's all coming
out,
Bobby.
Maybe that's why we get
along. We are going to have a friendship. I'm so excited. I have told people in the past that I meet one friend a year in Los Angeles, and that might not seem like a lot, but I have 23 good friends. That's a lot of friends.
That's a lot in LA.
It is. And 18 of them are comics. So it's all good.
Well, we were internet friends. And now we're at the very least Squadcast friends.
Exactly. It's virtual friends. And so let me just ask you one more thing and we'll get to your story. By the way, Bobby's story today, I'm super excited. It's called Cyber Stalking. So it's Cyber Stalking with Bobby, with comedian Bobby Oliver. So I, you know, that title right there has grabbed me, obviously. And so I'm excited for the story. But I also wanted to ask you about being a business owner in Los Angeles and what does that mean for you now?
Well, it's right now it's pretty much a hellscape. We have been closed for 6 months and we have still had to pay rent and insurance and utilities and all the stuff that comes with a business. You know, just because we can't be open doesn't mean we don't still have bills. So it's been horrible. We've been doing stuff on Zoom, and that's about as good as you can get. And then we, you know, have now moved one of our open mics. Our Friday mic has now been moved to outside. 6 feet apart, wearing masks.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I'm going to come. Is it Saturday nights then right now? Or it's Friday nights?
Friday, yeah.
Great.
And it's super safe because I'm not one of these people who thinks the virus is a hoax or, you know, anything like that. But all the evidence, all the science is saying that outside is safe, especially if you're 6 feet apart. And I measure the chairs with a measuring tape.
Is everybody bringing their own mic?
Well, you know, what we did is it's a micless mic. So we're so close to each other that you don't need a microphone.
Okay, great.
But I do have an outdoor patio class, also 6 feet apart wearing masks. We have a mic there so people can practice with the mic and the mic stand. And what I've done is I provide everyone gloves. You can't touch the mic without gloves. And I bought all of these mic covers. So everyone gets their own disposable mic covers that I provide, and they, you know, and everyone has their own mic cover, and then they take it off. The next person puts a mic cover on. And then some people have chosen not to even use the mic, but we're being super safe about it. It's kind of frustrating that the laws right now are not really taking things into consideration because they're just saying the entertainment industry is not essential.
Right.
And they're not thinking about safe ways to conduct comedy shows.
Yeah.
Technically, comedy shows or outdoor comedy shows are illegal in California.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So we haven't moved our show outside. It's still on Zoom. But everyone in LA is doing it. And
but what do you mean by the show itself? In other words, you're allowed to do the open mics, but you're not allowed to do a proper show. They know the difference? How do they know the difference?
Okay. Well, they haven't mentioned open mics, so I've decided that it's legal to have the open mic because there's no audience there. You know, it's not
That's
a show. It's
awesome.
So if it, and we don't have a mic, so if the cops come, we're just going to say it's an AA meeting.
You are so, that is so brilliant, Bobby. That's perfect. That's so smart. And then everybody just changes their routine. And so, can you imagine how hard everybody would start laughing? Like if a cop walked up and you were on the stage and then you just started into, you know, when I was 15 years old, whatever, and just made up and you just go and you make a whole story up. That'd be hilarious.
I mean, comics are all drug addicts and alcoholics anyway. We're all talking about it anyway.
The thing is, you know, to be a really good comedian, you certainly have to get on the stage 250 times a year or 200 times a year. So the only way to do that is to be in a place where they have comedy. Therefore, you have to be at a mic somewhere and there's no other way.
It's usually in a bar. But I mean, I don't drink. Because I got my alcoholism out of the way in high school and college.
Good for you. Good for you.
So I was actually in rehab when I was 17.
Wow.
So I don't drink. I'm a huge pothead.
Yeah.
Let's not pretend.
Yeah.
I'm a huge pothead, but I don't drink at all.
So that's very interesting. Were your brothers and sisters, did they also have that issue when they were young in Georgia?
Go
ahead.
I mean, yeah, I come from a long line of drug addicts.
Yeah. I was just curious because also, like, I'm the youngest of six and you're the youngest of five. And, you know, that being said, like, I got away with, or I did a lot of stuff. You know, there was no parental guidance by the time I was.
Oh, yeah, they're over
years.
It by the time you're
way over
by the time
it.
You're born, the parents are like, okay, let the other kids raise them.
Yeah, when my oldest sister was 18, she wasn't allowed to go to the cast party that she was the lead of in the music. She wasn't allowed to go to the cast party, right? It was our town. And she was the lead. She wore that dress, the bridal gown and everything. And anyway, when I was 17, I crossed the country in an Econoline van with Bobby Pfeiffer with a mattress in the back for like a month. You know what I mean? So times change. And
your parents were like, she'll be fine.
Yeah, it was just, yeah,
it's fine.
My dad was gone already. And my mom just, you know, she just didn't care. She was just truly overparenting, or maybe I didn't allow her. I'm not sure how it all went down, but I do know that my mother was very young in terms of, like, she got married at 18. And so there's, in my opinion, a bit of an arrested development. She didn't get a chance to learn and grow. And the only thing she had was that book Passages. You know what I mean? Like, there was like one book that was helping people in a mental health way. There wasn't a lot of that going on in the 70s.
No, there was no looking inward in the 70s. But yeah, they're just tired by then. They're just like, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I get it. Anyway, Bobby, I'm super glad you're here. So let's get over to your story. But before we do, I did want to remind everybody that the Story-Worthy Hour of Power is en fuego on Sunday nights, you guys. We're on Zoom every Sunday night, and the show starts at 6 o'clock, and you hear five true stories from people who've already been on the Story-Worthy podcast. So, Bobby, I hope you'll come on and tell a story. But after that, at 7 o'clock, we play Story Smash, the storytelling game show with Blanka Patch and Danny Zucker. And you guys, it's gotten better and better and funnier, and I'm dying for you guys to come over. Everybody can play. Everybody can spin the wheel and tell a true one-minute story. And then Blaine and Danny. And tomorrow night, Judy Gold is on the show. And next month, Kevin Nealon's coming on the show. So I'm very excited. And you guys can come over and play Story Smash. Laugh your ass off. I promise. Head over to storyworthypodcast.com. And at the very, very top of the page, there is the ticket site. Click the ticket site. And guess what? There's always a free option. Yeah, because I'm a giver, and you know that. So please, you guys, don't forget, head over to storyworthypodcast.com. Let me entertain you every Sunday night during the pandemic. All right, you guys, she's here right now. Bobby Oliver, you heard her. What an amazing girl. She is from Covington, Georgia. And I didn't know this, but that's where the Dukes of Hazzard TV series was filmed.
Yes.
And that is so hot, Bobby. Come on.
And I was a kid. I was a kid when it was going on. So you couldn't go to the grocery store without coming back with like a signed 8x10 by Cooter.
Cooter. Cooter was the guy. He was like a lackey, wasn't he? Kind of like the guy, the third wheel.
You know what? It's been so long. I don't even remember who Cooter was.
Who cares? It's a goddamn funny word. I respect that. Bobby has appeared, you guys, on ABC, TNN, The Style Network, WeTV. I remember WeTV. What happened to that?
I don't know. I never even saw the thing I was on it. So
it was WeTV. It was women's entertainment. It didn't work, I guess. I don't know.
And I was on a show called Sex Box, so I guess that's women's entertainment.
Well, obviously, we know that. Bobby just wrote a book, you guys. She just wrote a book. It's called The Tao of Comedy, and you guys can find it right now on your website, bobbyoliver.net, and you can also watch her new special, Bobby Oliver Greatest Hits. Right now, it's on Amazon Prime. You guys will enjoy it. Trust me, you will enjoy it.
Yeah.
Bobby plays all over the place when we're not in a pandemic. She's got a fantastic Southern style, as it were. And again, head over to bobbyoliver.net, and you are going to love this girl. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Bobby Oliver. Yay!
Thank you. I'm so excited about this. I just want to say off the bat, trigger warning. This story is not for the meek. Okay, so I get attacked online a lot because I'm a woman with an opinion on the internet. And years ago, I had this really severe cyber stalker. He was an MRA. That stands for Men's Rights Advocate. Yeah, because that's a thing. Evidently, men's rights are a thing. It's as if the NAAWP were a thing. But yeah, I think you might know them better by their new name, incels. They call themselves incels now because I guess they thought involuntary celibate sounded better. So I'm on Twitter one day and I tweet like this innocuous thing about feminism. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this anonymous account tweets me, responds to me, and he says, "I hope you get raped." And I was like, "Wow, you led with that." Like, you led with that? You know, usually that's like three sentences in to any internet argument. But no, you led with, "I hope you get raped." So I blocked him, of course. And then he started a new Twitter account just to respond to me. And he tweeted me, "You think you can block me, bitch? I hope you get violently raped." And I was like, "Oh, violently raped. Okay, violently raped. Not the good kind, I guess." And so I blocked him again. And then he created another Twitter account to respond to me, "You can't get rid of me, bitch. I hope you get ass raped." And I was like, "Dude, just ask me out already. We clearly have a chemistry." Oh, you know, just ask me out already. So, you know, I blocked him again, and he kept making new accounts over and over. He ended up creating over 40 different Twitter accounts just to tweet me. So I had tweeted that I was appearing at Flappers Comedy Club, and he tweeted me and Flappers and said, "I'm going to go to that cunt show." Me, I'm the cunt. "I'm going to go to that cunt show, rape her with a broken Coke bottle, and slit her throat with it." And I was like, "Well, you still got to buy two drinks, like everybody else. You're not getting out of it."
You're so fast. You are
You're
so,
not getting out of it that easily.
You're too quick.
Like, "You're my bringer, dude. You're my bringer." So I was like, "Okay, so maybe I should go talk to the LAPD at this point, right?" And I was like, "Okay, so if the LAPD is going to look at my Twitter account, maybe I should look at my Twitter account just to see what I've been tweeting lately before they look at it." And it was during the Ferguson stuff, all that stuff with Ferguson. So there was so much anti-police stuff on my Twitter. You know, like now, there was so much like, "The police just want to protect and serve themselves." And at one point I was like, "I didn't stutter when I said fuck the police." And then I was like, "I didn't stutter when I said delete, delete, delete." So I deleted all the anti-police stuff before I went to the LAPD. And so when I went to them, they asked me if I have my own security team. I was like, "Just how successful do you think I am?" It's like, "Do you recognize me?" "No, I don't have my own security team." I'm like the Gary Coleman of comedy. You know, like, I need a security guard, but I might also apply for a job as a security guard. So the LAPD was useless. Shocking, I know. The LAPD was useless, so they referred me to the LA District Attorney Cyberstalking Unit. So after I got finished telling the Cyberstalking Unit what a tweet was, I was like, maybe y'all should get a Twitter account, just so you know.
No way.
And so then you're going to love this. So then the district attorney gave me some tips. Okay. So here's the first tip. He said, when you're walking to your car at night, be alert. I was like, I'm a woman in America. I'm alert as fuck. I'm alert as fuck at all times. I am alert as fuck. I always know where all the exits are. I know who might hurt me, who I can take, who's got my shit, my back if the shit goes down. I'm alert as fuck. And then they told me to vary my route home. So I'm like, isn't he just going to kill me at the comedy club?
Oh, shit.
Where I say I'm going to be every day. Like, wouldn't he just kill me there? Like, he's not waiting in the ditch in front of Starbucks. Like, this is not Fallujah, for God's sake. So the LAPD was useless. The district attorney was useless. It turned out the FBI was useless. And so at this point, I'm driving around, no lie, with a bat in my car. A baseball bat in my car. I'm sleeping with a hammer in my bed, which is really uncomfortable, by the way. And meanwhile, this guy just keeps tweeting me. You know, he's like, he tweets me, you should kill yourself. You should take 100 sleeping pills and kill yourself. You should cut your wrist. You should kill yourself. And I'm like, man, it's like the voice in my head got a Twitter account. Like, God, it sounds so much harsher coming from someone else, you know? And then he's like, and here's was his favorite thing. He'd tweet me all day, every day. You're an unfunny, fat, ugly cunt. You're an unfunny, fat, ugly cunt all day long. And I wanted to be like, well, it could be worse. I could be obsessed with an unfunny, fat, ugly cunt. Like, what kind of loser would that make me? So since everybody was useless in helping me, I decided to go undercover on Twitter as an MRA, as a men's rights advocate. Yes, true story.
Wow.
I started an MRA account. Okay, it's super easy. First of all, you just need a profile picture from Atlas Shrugged. And you just need to, like, retweet a bunch of hateful shit and then say a bunch of stupid shit and misspell everything. It's really easy. And so I tried to keep us very different. Like, I made my MRA account. I made him LOL because I ha-ha.
Wait a second.
One step ahead.
That's it. That's smart. That's very smart. But wait a minute. Did you get a lot of followers from that account, on that account?
MRA followers, yes. Yes, yeah. So here's what I did.
Yeah, like all of a sudden, like, did they, like, welcome you? Like, oh, we're so glad you're here kind of thing?
Yes, yes. But I didn't immediately follow him because I didn't want to create an account and then follow him. So what I did is I started following all these MRA people, all these porn stars, and tweeting a bunch of stupid shit to the porn stars, a bunch of really, like, thirsty, desperate shit to porn stars. And so then I waited. I kept an eye on his account, but I didn't follow it yet. I waited until someone retweeted him, which took forever, by the way. Took forever till someone retweeted him. So someone retweeted him, and then I liked all that person's posts, and then I liked their retweet of him, and then I followed him. So it seemed like I naturally discovered him. From following. So I'd been on Twitter as an MRA like 2 months before I actually followed him. So it seemed real realistic. And so then, you know, we talked back and forth, and then I private messaged him. He private messaged me back. We started carrying on this conversation. Swear to God, I became BFFs with my cyber stalker. I found out his name. I found out where he lived. Florida, which is terrifying enough.
Yeah.
That he's from Florida. I found out what he does for a living.
What?
I found out all this shit about him just from trying. You know, just from trying. So I went to the courthouse to get a restraining order. And at the time, I think it's changed now, but at the time, a restraining order in Los Angeles was $400.
No kidding.
Unless it was a domestic violence restraining order. Then it was $50.
Oh.
Right. So if I had fucked him, I would save $350. But come on, let's face it. If I had fucked him, he would just go away. Like they do. And so last thing. So the best thing about this, though, is I was just so relieved to find out he wasn't a comedian. Because up until this point, all of my stalkers had been male comics. And my biggest fear was that I was going to be killed by someone hack. Like, is it too much to ask to be killed by someone funny? I just want to be killed by someone funny. So that's my cyber stalking story.
Okay, so I have so many questions. When did you contact Twitter?
Oh, Twitter was also useless. Twitter, well, the LAPD finally got Twitter to, finally subpoenaed Twitter and got them to turn over his, like, you know, whatever it's called, IP address. And they found out he was in Florida. And as soon as they found out he was in Florida, they just stopped the case. They just dropped it. Because, you know, nobody's ever driven across state lines to kill someone before.
Oh, wait, are you serious? So you're saying that Florida doesn't have any cyber stalking laws?
Well, they would, I could, so when the LAPD dropped it, I contacted the FBI. And I even had a friend in the FBI who told me, gave me somebody's number to contact. And they just did not care. They did, Christine, he would even like mention the FBI and Twitter as he was, he would at them while he was threatening me just to show me they're not going to do shit, bitch. And I was a wreck. I really was sleeping with a hammer. I was a wreck for months. This went on for months. And nobody in a position of authority gave two shits. In fact, the LAPD was really rude about it. They acted like, well, it's just online. What do you care if you're being called, I hope you get raped, or I'm going to cut your throat, or, yeah.
What year was this?
This was during Ferguson. I think it was 2014.
Oh my gosh! So that's really not that long
ago.
Were you with your husband Chris?
Yeah, we've been together since we were 19 years old.
Oh my God, that's beautiful. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, we met doing comedy in 1988.
That is so beautiful. Wow. So when this was going on, what was he saying, Bobby?
What was he saying?
This is taking up a lot of your time.
Well, he was not on Twitter at the time. He ended up getting a Twitter account just so he could, like, you know, at the guy and say, fuck you, you know, and all this other stuff. But the thing is, everybody kept giving me the worst advice. Men kept saying, well, just don't respond to him. Just don't respond to him. First of all, I'll respond to whoever I want to, whenever I want to, especially if they're threatening me. A rape survivor threatening me with rape, threatening to slit my throat, threatening to show up to my show. I'll respond to whoever the fuck I want to. And obviously it didn't do any good because I kept blocking him and he would create accounts. He created accounts called Behead Women.
Oh,
he created accounts with my name in it.
Okay, so in 2014, did they not have... Okay, so right now, like, I've had to block a lot of people, and Twitter always sends a thing like, what are you reporting? You know, spam, abuse,
They didn't have that system. or at least okay. to the point that they had it then. But here's the thing. They just shut down that account. He creates a new account. I found out from being BFFs with him that the reason why he stopped, he also, not only was he stalking me and harassing me, he was also stalking Tori and harassing Tori Amos.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
Yeah, and so I found out from being BFFs with him that the way, his name is John, by the way. He sells hats and stuff at flea markets. He lives in the panhandle. But I found out that Twitter finally started that thing where you have to give them your phone number.
Yeah.
To have a Twitter account. And once they got his phone number and could identify who this Twitter account actually belonged to, because up until then, you could create any email address and have that be your, and they can't verify who you are. But when they started having to like verify your phone number, that's when he stopped, because they knew who he was. That is the only thing that stopped him, was that phone number thing. And he was harassed.
He never got any punishment.
No. In fact, he used to tell me things like he goes, women call the police on me all the time just for looking at them. I can't believe you could just look at some. I was like, I wanted to say, motherfucker, you weren't just looking at somebody. If somebody called the police and they showed up, you weren't just looking at somebody. He even was so hateful to a doctor's office receptionist one time that they dropped him, and he called all these other doctor's offices in that area trying to get an appointment. And the receptionist had called every doctor's office.
Wow.
And warned them about him. And he couldn't get an appointment with anybody in his town because of that. I was like, go her.
That's it. That's it. Now, tell me more about when you were, you know, friends with him, and how many messages went back and forth. What in the world? And then how did that end?
Well, it ended when he stopped harassing me. When he had to say his phone number and he stopped harassing me, I just abandoned that MRA Twitter account. And now I don't know. I can't remember the password anymore because I've changed phones so many times. But my name on there was John Clark.
Unbelievable.
And I said, hey, my name's John. He goes, my name's John too, but it's spelled with an H because I had spelled it J-O-N.
Right.
He was like, yeah, it's spelled with an H. But yeah, here's the craziest thing about this to me. So MRAs, a men's rights advocate, if you go down this rabbit hole, I'm really sorry for what you find. If you start looking through these people's accounts, it's really terrifying. But they are all super racist. What a surprise. The white supremacist patriarchy is racist. But here's the thing. He was not racist, and it made him upset that so many MRAs were racist. And he understood racism, but he thought sexism was fake.
Isn't that unbelievable? Well, look, I mean, it has taken, obviously, a lot of time for all these things to be accepted. Yeah. You know, I think about now how weed was like the devil's,
lettuce. The devil's lettuce.
It was the craziest thing. And now people are saying, like, not only is it really, really okay, not only that, it could be curing cancer. Yeah. I mean, there is and some serious talk about that.
Yeah. And actually, there has been reports for scientific studies for years that have said that. But it just suddenly, and we actually spent our honeymoon in 1991 marching on Washington for legalization in D.C. But that just like, so we thought it would never get legal. And then like all of a sudden, a couple of Republicans came out for it. And then suddenly everybody accepted it. And now I go to a very posh frou-frou dispensary and buy my medicine.
Is it expensive or is it reasonable? You're just saying that.
Well, it's not legal to buy it in a parking lot anymore.
No, I know that. But I mean, like,
yeah, I no longer meet a guy behind Burger King.
I know. I used to have to pull into this guy's parking garage and like do circles until he came out. It was so stupid. It was creepy and freaky.
Yeah, I was like, I'm a grown woman. I just want to go to a place with a blue crushed velvet couch.
I know.
In the waiting room, like an adult.
Is it so much to ask to have a room that is covered in gold mirrors? Is that so much to ask?
Is this so much to ask to go buy pot where you don't have to like go into a place with like a bunch of mean dogs that you're terrified are going to bite you?
Yeah, or like two Russians at the counter and you can visibly see three guns in the back. Right. That's right. What you see.
Right. Or worse than that, you have to hang out with the guy for an hour to make it seem like you're really just friends. And he's not your drug dealer.
Right. It takes like 15 minutes and you got to make small talk and you don't know what to say. And then he gets you high and then you say, okay, because it was, you know, free.
You're like, I got to go.
I know. It just took forever.
But, you know, like I really am on it for legit stuff. Like I've been, you know, I've been raped three times. I can't have kids. I can't have kids because I was raped when I was little. And I have like serious PTSD. I'm bipolar. I was in two different mental institutions, one in high school, one in college. And literally the only thing that has ever helped my PTSD, I've been on all kind of drugs.
Yeah.
I saw a psychiatrist from the time I was in third grade until I was a sophomore in college every week. The only thing that has ever helped me is marijuana.
Yeah, it is. It's like the it's like a drug from the gods.
Yeah, it literally is because it's nature. It's natural. It literally is from God.
It is. It's a plant. Yeah. I can't wait to have a little backyard of my own that I can start growing because I've never done that at that side of things, and I think that would be a really fun project, like a hobby.
It's very hard, though.
Yeah, I understand
that. Yeah, I've tried many times, and I've never been able to successfully do it.
Yeah, I've tried just like as a house plant, and that, of course, never works. But yeah. I guess what I mean is I'd like to have like a grow room in my house, you know, whatever it takes. I would like to have like a small space.
But you have to basically have a degree in botany to produce good pot. Yeah,
it's like making wine, of course. But what I want to get back to real quick, and we got to wrap it up, is that you said you go to this posh place. Is it really, or are you just saying that? Because like I've gone to at least 12 or 15 dispensaries because I like to figure out who I like. Then mm-hmm. I like them for a couple of years, then I change. So what is it? Like now I've got a great place, but it's not posh. It's just good for me.
Yeah. Well, I go to Cornerstone Collective in mm-hmm. Eagle Rock. Mm-hmm. And once I started going there, I never went to another place. They are so knowledgeable about the medicine side of it.
Yeah.
Like they really know, like I can't smoke sativa. It's like smoking a panic attack.
Oh, that's all I smoke. Funny.
Oh my God. No, it's like smoking a panic attack. So I smoke indica only, and they can tell you now it's pot is grown for different things. Some are grown to be analgesics. Some are grown to be anti-inflammatories. So like they are so knowledgeable, and they were one of the first like really legal places. Like they mm-hmm. did everything you have to do. And I like going there because it's not a drug dealer. It's like they know so much about the medicine that if they're out of something that I normally use, they can tell me very specifically what to get that will help my symptoms.
That's really good.
And like, I can't smoke stuff that was grown outdoors because I have a lot of allergies. I can't smoke any of the purples.
Interesting.
Because they make me cough. So I just like going somewhere where they really know their shit. And I don't do edibles at all. I'm one of the crazy people that doesn't do edibles because it's like doing LSD, which I love. I love mushrooms, but
yeah, to me it is too. To me it gets too, and I haven't done it that often, but well, yes, I have. But the point is, it gets a little too like I don't. It's not the word psychedelic isn't right, but I kind of feel my feet leave the ground, and I don't like that. That's not the kind.
Yeah, it's
thing
too
I like.
Trippy, and you feel it the next day. And, you know, it's like it's too much. Some people love edibles, but it's also very difficult to know how much you're consuming.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, it's
course.
Not
There's
usually
so
like
many accidents. It's, you know.
And that's why so many people, like, it'll become legal somewhere and people be like, oh, let's try pot. People who never would. And they don't want to smoke it. So they're like, oh, I'm sure edibles are fine.
Right. And then they get sick and they get out of control and then they never do it again. And they say it's the devil's weed.
Right. And it's really just because they did it in the most potent, unpredictable way you can do it.
So listen, we got to wrap this up. I want to remind everybody to go over there and get Bobby's book, The Tao of Comedy. But I also, before we wrap it up, I mean, my God.
And by the way, the book is not new. Just want to say, I didn't just write it. It's like 6 years old.
No, it was 2014.
No, 2013.
2013. It's still relative, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, I've been so lucky with the amazing reviews that it has gotten and the people who write me from all over the world.
Yeah. Wendy Liebman has endorsed it. Wendy Liebman, Maria Bamford. Yes. And that's very impressive.
Yes. And just the people who tell me that it's got not only made them a better comedian, but like got them through surgery or got them through the death of a loved one. You know, because
I'm going to buy it. I wish I had it. I'm going to buy it. I will.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, it's about using meditation and mindfulness to tap into your authentic voice as an artist and to be more prolific and to just not let everything torture you so much.
Wow, dude.
Because comedy tortures you.
Well, listen, I'm listening to your history, your background. It's clear that you're a comedian because comedians come from a lot of tragedy and stuff in the past. But, oh God, I'm so sorry about the rapes. Was it three different people or was it a...
Yeah, different times. Once when I was really little and then again when I was 12 and again when I was 19. And then like everyone, I also have like 1,000 inappropriate things that ways that men touched me and did things to me and harassed me and did, you know, and all this other stuff. But as far as like actual, you know, flat out assault, three times, once when I was 5. Once when I was 12, and once at a fraternity house when I was 19.
And so was this all in Georgia, as it were? I mean, can I blame any of it on the South?
No, I mean, rape is definitely not particular to any area.
Right.
You know?
That's
but one thing that's true is that when you have families that, when you have poor families and the parents are working all the time and they can't afford childcare. So the childcare just goes to the other kids, you know, and there's not a lot of like parental supervision and poverty, you know, it births drug addiction and alcoholism and it also births like trauma. And, you know, so it's no one's fault except for the guys who actually did it. But yeah, I mean, I guess I've dealt with it because I talk about it. You know, I'm not afraid to talk about it. But to say that it doesn't still affect me, even though nothing like that has happened to me since I was 19 years old and I'm 52 now, it affects the way I do everything. Like women, you know, you can't go out at night, you can't walk. You can't go for walks at night by yourself. You can't. There's so many things. I'm scared to get in elevators with people. I just interpret. I'm constantly, like I'm saying, I'm alert as fuck. I'm hyper vigilant. So I'm constantly like trying to read everybody's vibes and check the exits and where everybody's situated. And
that's really smart. It's really smart.
I wish I could stop it, but I can't stop doing it.
Bobby, I got to wrap it up, but. I've talked about this on my show before. I was raped at 15.
I'm so
and
sorry.
I just this morning was talking to my boyfriend about it because I found out somebody who was on my show here, Storyworthy, I could say it, James Veitch, he's been accused of rape. And, you know, it happened like 20 years ago, but like 12 women have come forward.
Oh my gosh.
And it is damning. And he lost his HBO special and he lost his Quibi show and he's basically canceled. Yeah. And so I was talking about this morning and I was saying, I'm still not at rest about what happened at 15. Like, I'm not even close to at rest about it. Every day I want to out the guy. And I haven't done that. I mean, I did in terms of I wrote an article in the Huffington Post, but I didn't name him. And I know he's there, and I know he's on Facebook, and I know people from high school are friends with him. And I'm so tempted, but I just don't know. My anger, I'm conflicted because I don't want to spend my anger. I just want it gone, you know, and I don't want to address it.
And up until up until recently, it wouldn't have even mattered if you outed him. Nobody gave a shit about rape.
Right.
Until recently. Nobody, you know, the only person that gets hurt by outing your attacker is you. You were the person whose name would get dragged through the media.
Exactly.
And that still happens somewhat. But since Me Too.
I have a daughter 13 years old. And I think about her in a year and a half that happened. I mean, what? I would kill him. You know what I mean? Like there would be no, it just fucked me up for, I'm 54. So there you go. You know, I mean, it's just an unbelievable thing to have to live through. And I'm so grateful that you're able to share your experience and be so honest and forthright. And Bobby, honestly, you've educated so many people in your studio and in your books and what you do and your talks. And I feel like today I've learned a lot. I really do. And I just am so happy you came on the show. Thank you.
And can I say this? So Dow Comedy Studio is an intersectional feminist comedy space. And we have a no pro-rape joke policy, a no victim-blaming rape joke policy. You can make jokes about rape culture, but you can't go on my stage and use my microphone to say, well, what'd that bitch expect? Why'd she go in the room with him? Why was she dressed like that? And I'm like the only person, the only club that has that rule, and it changed everything for the experience of women in comedy. It changed everything. Everything. And I get attacked for it all the time. I've gotten death threats over it. And I'm telling you, if you want a space that you can go into and know that you don't have to sit there and listen to people make fun of rape all night, Dow Comedy Studio is your place. And if you feel like I'm impeding on your free speech, then by all means, please go to another comedy venue. Because the women in comedy are not going to come to any place I pay for and listen to how they had it coming and it was their fault.
I appreciate you so much. Thanks, Bobby. You're such a talent. You're an amazing person. So, okay, Dow Comedy Studio now on Friday nights. You're doing some comedy there in the back parking lot. So I'm going to join you there and everybody else can join you too. And tell us a little bit about the Zoom show.
Yes. So we, every Saturday night we have a show on Zoom. And it is, you know, comedians really from all over the world now because it's on Zoom.
Yeah. That's kind of fun, isn't it? Yeah.
We have a rule that we never have more than a 50% male lineup. So you will always see plenty of women, plenty of LGBT. We have the longest running women only open mic in Los Angeles. It's 9 years old. It's every Monday night. Women only. We are trans inclusive. We're intersectional feminists. On Tuesday, we have an LGBT plus allies open mic. So we have regular benefits for the Downtown Women's Shelter, for the LGBT Center. We won LA Weekly's Best of LA, Best Place for Women Comics.
That's terrific.
We won Open Mic Review's Best Safe Space Mic and Best Place to Do Your First Set.
Oh, that's so great. That's amazing. I love it. And I love the work you do, the energy you put into it. You've helped so many people. And we need more Bobby Olivers. That's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. And thank you for easing my fear about doing storytelling.
Just a tremendous story, man. Honestly, you really moved me. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's been really wonderful.
Cool. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much again for tuning in to Storyworthy. Don't forget to check out the Storyworthy Hour of Power on Sunday nights. So now you've got Bobby Oliver's got you covered on Saturday nights. I've got you covered on Sunday nights. And don't forget to check out my new YouTube channel. I actually have put some energy into YouTube. How about that? It's under Christine Blackburn. It's easy enough to find. And all the Storyworthy Hour of Powers are up there. So there's 17 of my shows up there. 17 times 5. I don't know what that is, but it's a lot of stories. And they're all available to watch, you guys, right now on YouTube. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Bobby Oliver. Thank you so much, Bobby. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story-Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.